Great. Thank you, Noelia. Good afternoon and welcome to our GE Capital Investor webcast. The slides for this presentation are available via the webcast, and they're available on for download and printing on our website at www.ge.com/investor. For today's webcast, we have GE Vice Chairman and GE Capital CEO Mike Neal and several senior members from his GE Capital leadership team. The team is going to spend the next hour or so taking you through the presentation, and then we'll open up the lines for your questions. As always, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based on our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. As you know, the world can change, and those elements can change, so please interpret them in that light. Now I'd like to turn it over to our GE Vice Chairman and GE Capital CEO, Mike Neal.
Great. Thanks, Trevor. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to start today's update with a summary of the business and the key messages you're going to hear throughout this call. We believe we have a strong and advantaged business model and are well positioned to compete. In some ways, we are even more advantaged today due to the changes we've seen in the competitive landscape over the last few years. Our balance sheet is safer and stronger. We had $66 billion of cash at the end of the third quarter, and our ratios continue to improve. There will be a lot more to come on Basel III, but we believe we are well positioned to meet the new guidelines in a capital-efficient way. We've talked in the past about a target of $440 billion of E&I, or ending net investment, in 2012, and we're ahead of that plan. More importantly, our non-core assets are down, which has allowed us to grow our core business. Our team is excited to be back on offense. We have deep domain, and we are good at collateral. This helps us deliver value to our customers. We'll spend some time today going through losses. We feel good about losses. They are lower than both the stress base case and our plan. We'll do a deeper dive on real estate. That business continues to be challenged, but losses are about what we had in our roll-up for the year. We've been working through the impact of Dodd-Frank. There are two key points here. Number one, our business model is intact. And number two, the Fed will be our consolidated supervisor, and we are ready for that when it happens. And one last point. We talked at the beginning of the year about the need for upwards of an additional $2 billion of capital from our parent. Due to our strong performance this year, we do not expect there to be a capital requirement. Here's a look at our performance this year. Liquidity and funding are strong. Commercial paper is down to $41 billion versus a high of $105 billion in the first quarter of 2008. We completed the pre-funding of 2010 in 2009, and we've done $24 billion of long-term funding so far this year for 2011. As I said earlier, our balance sheet is down $40 billion so far this year, and we'll be down another $10 billion or so in the fourth quarter. Cost continues to be a good story for us. We told you last year we were targeting another 5% of cost out. That number will end up being closer to 8%. I'll show you our Tier 1 common ratio in a minute. That continues to get better. Losses are better, and that will translate into about $3 billion of earnings this year versus $1.7 billion last year. All in, this puts us in a good position for 2011. Page 4 is an update on funding and liquidity. We had a target of $20 to $25 billion of long-term funding this year, so we were right on plan. Kathy Cassidy, our treasurer, is here, and we'll walk you through what the next couple of years look like. Since 1-1, we've bought our E&I down by over $40 billion. Bill Carey, our chief operating officer, will show you how we've been able to grow our core business while we shrink the overall balance sheet. Our CP is at about $41 billion. If you look back to the fall of 2008, we had $12 to $15 billion of cash and about $80 billion of CP. We ended the third quarter at $66 billion of cash on hand and also had about $52 billion of bank backup lines. So if you look at our coverage here, cash and backup lines were about 2.9 times CP. Our Tier 1 ratios compare favorably to banks. We were at 8.2% in 3Q, up from 7.6% at the end of last year. We feel good, really good, about our funding and capital. I've shared this next page with you before, so I'll only hit the high points. Our model remains the same, and it has continued to evolve as we've come out of the financial crisis. The vast majority of what we originate is through our sales force that calls on CFOs around the world. Our sales team has GE Capital on their business cards. We do not use intermediaries or brokers. This gives us the ability to act quickly and have good controls on price. We have deep domain expertise, especially in healthcare, energy, media, and aircraft. It's one of the advantages of who we are. We have the breadth and knowledge of the GE industrial businesses in those areas, as well as the financial expertise of GE Capital. We know collateral. We are mainly a collateralized lender today, just as we've always been. We've got an experienced risk management team with over 7,000 professionals around the world. Underwrite to hold remains core to our business model. We're operationally focused. Jeff Bornstein, our CFO, is here. He'll show you how we've been able to take out about $4 billion of cost over the last 2 years. Lastly, we are match funded. We match assets and liabilities, fixed versus floating. For example, if we lend floating, we borrow floating. Term duration. If we lend 5 years, we borrow 5 years. We match currencies. This is an important differentiator for us. On the next page, we show you how we like playing in spaces that require high operating intensity and where we have specific industry or geographic domain. If you think about GE Capital in the future, we're going to compete with 15 to 20 core franchises. How do we define a core business? It's all the things I just talked about. It's where our domain differentiates us, where we have a great origination capability, where we have underwriting expertise, businesses that are operationally intensive, businesses that are asset intensive. They require strong collateral, management, valuation expertise, and have secondary markets for assets. We're not a hedge fund or a private equity company. We manage assets and collateral. The businesses on the right of this page are businesses we have decades of experience in. We have a strong competitive advantage and deep domain expertise. Page 7 shows our year-to-date volume. We've done $253 billion globally through the third quarter, which is up about 15% versus last year. You can see some of the mid-market customers we work with on the right side of the page. We continue to underwrite new business at accretive ROIs. We've held at about 2.9% so far this year. We'll show you how that continues to improve our own book margins. We've continued to be a key provider of liquidity to the U.S. economy. We've done over $254 billion of new U.S. commercial financing and have provided an additional $221 billion of credit to close to 50 million U.S. consumers since January of 2008. We're back on offense and are seeing good growth in volume. On page 8, we've got a look at how we're thinking about our normalized returns. Just to be clear, I'm not giving guidance here on a time frame, but we're looking at the future. At the end of this year, we'll have about $480 billion of ENI. $105 billion of that is in our red assets or runoff portfolio that Mark Begor manages for us. Our core business today is about $375 billion. We will continue to run off our red book, and that frees up capacity for us to continue to grow our core portfolio. In the future, we'll be a business with $440 billion of ENI, plus some potential growth depending on what is happening in the debt markets and GE's overall growth rate. We'll have a consumer business that is around a 2% return that will be 15 to 20% of the portfolio. We'll see our real estate business recover to a 1 to 2% ROI. We plan to grow the verticals, GKS and EFS, to a little bit larger percent of our portfolio than today. We expect these businesses to be at a 2 to 3% ROI. That leaves us with about 45 to 50% of our portfolio in mid-market lending and leasing at good returns. All that adds up to a business that's about a 2% ROI. We're not certain what the final Basel III requirements will be on Tier 1 Common, but we expect they'll be in the 7 to 9% range. We're planning on meeting those requirements in a capital-efficient way. We've talked about restarting the dividend to our parent in 2012. That gets us to an ROE that's roughly in the 11 to 15% range. So there's a lot of variables to this, but we want to give you some insight into how we're thinking about the business going forward. We'll be smaller and more focused, but more profitable. This is how we see the world today. The business splits are directional and subject to change as the world changes. But we're focused on growing our core portfolio and remixing our portfolio to a higher returning business. Next, on page 9, we've got an update on Dodd-Frank. We spend a lot of time on this. As I said earlier, our business model remains intact. Today, we are supervised by the OTS and the FDIC, but supervision for us will transfer to the Fed. We are ready for that when it happens. As you may have heard me say before, whatever the regulations are, we will comply with them. I'm more concerned about regulations than the regulator. We expect the impact of the Volcker rule to be limited. We are not a trader. We have less than $2 billion invested in private equity funds, and those are in runoff. Rulemaking is ongoing, so we'll need to wait and see. But at this point, we don't see a big impact for us. I've talked already about the capital requirements. We've got this modeled into our plan. We are a much smaller player than most of the banks in derivatives. We use derivatives the old-fashioned way to hedge our risks. We are not in the business of derivatives. We are an end user. We also don't see a big impact from holding a piece of securitizations. They are on book today, and historically, we have always held a continuing interest in our securitizations. So there will be more to come on this as the final rules are determined over the next 24 months, but this summarizes the impact as we see it today. Lastly, on page 10, I just wanted to pull this all together before I hand it off to Jeff Bornstein, who will give you an update on the financials. Earnings will be up this year to about $3 billion, maybe a little better. We see good growth next year and in 2012. We've made a lot of progress on liquidity and capital and expect to keep cash somewhere in a prudent range and have Tier 1 Common of 7-9%, again, depending on the final guidelines. We'll have higher margins. We've increased margins from 4.6% last year to about 5% this year and should see some growth next year. Our returns will be north of our weighted average cost of capital in the 11-15% range. This should generate surplus capital. Again, we don't expect to fund the income maintenance agreement this year and are looking forward to starting the dividend back, our dividend back in 2012. Lastly, we're going to stay true to our business model, leveraging our strategic connection with GE. So here's the rest of the agenda, and as Trevor said earlier, we'll leave time for Q&A at the end. Jeff Bornstein, our CFO, will give you a financial update. Kathy Casty, our treasurer, will then go through funding and liquidity. I'm happy to be able to introduce Ryan Zanin to you. He came on board over the summer as our new chief risk officer after Jim Colicker retired and brings a wealth of banking experience with him. Mark Bigor runs our restructuring and our U.S. retail business. He's going to give you an update on what we're seeing here in the U.S. consumer business. Ron Pressman, the CFO of our real estate business, will cover where we are and what we're seeing in that space. Bill Carey, our chief operating officer, will talk more about how we're going back on offense and growing our core portfolio. I'll come back at the end, and then we'll open up the lines for Q&A. So with that, Jeff, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Mike, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to start with an update on 2010 key performance metrics. First, we expect earnings to be about $3 billion-plus for the year. That's up substantially from 2009 and about $1 billion higher than our plan coming into the year. E&I is expected to end the year at about $480 billion, which is a year ahead of the plan that we laid out at the end of 2008. Losses and impairments, we expect 2010 to finish at about $10.6 billion. That would be down a couple billion dollars versus 2009. And most businesses are running better than our plan, with the exception of real estate, which is about what we expected. Costs are lower again and will be down, as Mike said, almost $4 billion since 2008. We'll give you a deeper look at that in a moment. Volume is improving at better than $150 billion of on-book origination in 2010. Up versus 2009, and the pipelines are growing and pricing remains attractive with ROIs well above 2% in most businesses. Volume, as a matter of fact, in our commercial lending and leasing business is higher by more than 30% in 2010. Portfolio margins have improved to about 5%, and Bill will take you through more details on margins as we look forward. Cost of funds are better with improving spreads, and reserves appear to have peaked, and we estimate that ending the year around 2.5% to 2.6% in reserve coverage. And I'll cover more detail on that in a moment. So I'd say all in all, we feel the worst is behind us. The portfolio continues to improve, and with it, our financial performance, and we've got a solid base as we head into 2011. On the next page is a brief snapshot of the individual segments' performance through the third quarter and versus our internal plan. You know, first, commercial lending and leasing earnings through three quarters were $1 billion, well ahead of plan on better losses and improved pre-loss margins, and we expect the momentum to continue. The consumer businesses have also outperformed our plan, earning $2.2 billion through three quarters. Our global banking business has performed well, and our U.S. consumer business is on pace to have their most profitable year ever, driven by the risk actions we took leading into and during the crisis, and better pricing and better portfolio performance. Real estate continues to be a challenge, but there appears to be some signs of stabilization. The business lost $1.3 billion through the third quarter and is on pace to perform as we expected and we planned. And Ron Pressman will provide an update later this afternoon. Aviation and energy have been solid performers throughout the crisis and are performing as we expected to slightly better. So overall, we're on pace to deliver a solid year and well ahead of our plans and expectations. Page 15, a quick update on losses and impairments. Starting on the left, 2009 losses and impairments totaled $12.6 billion, and we expect 2010 to total about $10.6 billion, in both cases below our base and adverse stress cases. Most every business outperformed their base case stress in 2010, with the exception of real estate, which was on the stress cases we expected. Couple of quick additional points. First, credit losses appear to be trending downward towards our average experience between 2003 and 2007, absent some significant environmental change from here. Two, we currently expect 2011 loss and impairments to be substantially lower than 2010. And third, it appears that our cumulative losses from 2009 through 2011 will be less than our own stress scenarios and substantially less, substantially lower than most others' worst-case expectations. On the next page, an update on delinquency and non-earnings. We expect mortgage, total consumer, and equipment delinquencies to continue their momentum downwards in the fourth quarter. Real estate will likely be flat to up slightly. Having said that, absolute real estate delinquent dollars have been effectively flat at about $2.3, $2.4 billion for the last three quarters. On the right side of the page, non-earning assets were at $12.3 billion at the end of the third quarter, down $400 million from the second, but down $800 million excluding the effects of foreign exchange. Year over year, excluding exchange, they're down almost $2 billion. As a percentage of financing receivables, non-earnings were down 27 basis points year over year. We expect to see further improvement in the fourth quarter and expect almost all businesses to participate. Overall, the portfolio continues to improve, and we think that we'll carry through to 2011. Quick update on reserves. As you know, we ended the third quarter with $9.1 billion of loss reserves, or 2.69% of financing receivables. These levels represent about 15 months of write-offs in reserve. And as you can see, reserve levels were flat with the second quarter and down $400 million versus the first quarter. We expect reserves to come down modestly at year-end through write-offs, and write-off levels will likely be higher in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter, as they normally are. But we expect credit losses through the income statement to continue to improve sequentially as they have in recent quarters. As you think about 2011, we expect absolute dollars of reserves to decline as reserved accounts go to resolution, including write-off, but we expect the portfolio improvement we realized in 2010 to continue into 2011, and as a result, the amount of credit losses or incremental new reserves we will require will be less than 2010. So just to be clear, we're not expecting huge reserve throwbacks. We expect that the reserves we have posted over the last several years will be utilized mainly for write-offs as intended. The earnings improvement from lower losses on the income statement is primarily generated by not having to put up new reserves as fewer accounts go delinquent and or non-earning. Quick update on costs. We continue to deliver on SG&A costs as we restructure the business and operate with discipline, particularly on discretionary costs. We expect SG&A to be down about $800 million in 2010, and that puts us down cumulatively at about $4 billion since the end of 2008. It's been a huge and important source of strength for us as we've worked through this crisis. And we'll continue to be diligent managing our cost structure and drive productivity. We'll be opportunistic on restructurings where they make financial sense to us, all while we continue to invest in our regulatory infrastructure and grow the front end of the business. So then finally, on page 19, I thought we'd take a quick look back on where we were in March of 2009 and how things have played out subsequently. As you recall, there was quite a few areas of concern. Kind of starting with a portfolio here, our U.S. consumer business, which Mark will give you an update on shortly, has performed remarkably well and is on track to have its most profitable year in 60 years. The U.K. mortgage business has been a lot of work, but has been profitable both in 2009 and 10, and we've reduced assets meaningfully since 2008. The real estate has been more or less as we expected, a real challenge, but as Ron will walk through, we're beginning to see some signs of stabilization in the book. Eastern European banks and JV banks have performed very well, and both GCAS and our middle market leveraged finance businesses have been real sources of strength and have extended their competitive position since 08. As a matter of fact, our U.S. leveraged finance business is also on track to have one of its best years ever in 2010. And corporate aircraft, on the other hand, has been an underperformer, and it's underperformed our expectations, but it's stabilized, and we're, again, leasing planes. And through the crisis, this business, the corporate aircraft business, as much as any, has suffered from its negative political sentiment. And then on the safe and secure plan, you know, we said we'd reduce the size of the business, and we're 1 year ahead of plan. We said we'd improve our capital ratios meaningfully, and we have. And we believe we're in good shape going forward, even under Basel III. We said we'd improve liquidity and funding risk, and as Kathy will walk through in a moment, we've done exactly that. And finally, on regulatory, although there's still many details to be understood and rules to be made, we continue to work towards building a world-class regulatory framework and team led by Dave Nason and the leadership team you have with you today. So with that, Kathy will give you an update on funding and liquidity.
This afternoon, I plan to cover several topics: our cash plan, our capital metrics, our cost of funding, and then wrap up with a few conclusions on why we feel our funding model remains both resilient and competitive. I'll start with sources and uses of cash. Our focus over the last 24 months has been to build a substantial cash balance so that irrespective of volatility in the debt markets, we can safely navigate a few years of heavy debt maturities. This pre-funding strategy has served us well. We entered 2010 with $69 billion of cash, raised almost $25 billion of unsecured long-term debt, and had higher cash flows than planned from asset sales, earnings, and business shrinkage, which totaled $41 billion. We easily handled our $66 billion of long-term debt maturities and, in fact, managed down our CP balances despite strong demand so that we could hit our year-end cash target of roughly $60 billion. As we look to the future, we will continue to use our extensive liquidity stress models to determine the appropriate cash balances. For 2011, our planned long-term debt issuance will be in the $25 to $30 billion range. Additional business shrinkage, shown here as a broad range, as well as earnings growth, will provide the bulk of our sources of funds for 2011. Excluding the disposition of BAC, our Central American bank, we grew our alternative funding in 2010 and will continue to do so in 11 and 12. We will maintain flexibility on the size of our CP outstanding, keeping within our targeted range of $40 to $50 billion. This plan will cover our $62 billion of maturity in 2011, while growing our 2011 year-end cash balance as we plan for heavy 2012 debt maturities of $81 billion. As we look beyond 2012, our plan is to roughly match debt issuance with debt maturities, and our cash balances should be in a $40 to $45 billion range. On the next slide, you can see that our capital position at both the GCC and JEX level continues to strengthen as you look at both our Tier 1 Common and Tier 1 ratios. This has been driven by our earnings growth and our ending net investment balances. These ratios should continue to improve as we execute our planned balance sheet shrinkage and earnings continue to rebound. In addition, we're not anticipating a dividend out of GE Capital in 2011. GE Capital's ratios, as Mike and Jeff both mentioned, should not be materially affected by the proposed Basel III adjustments, since we do not have a trading book, we have a deferred tax liability position versus a deferred tax asset, and we have no mortgage servicing rights. The impact of financial JVs is small for us as well, given the deductions already in our Basel I model and our planned sale of Garanti next year. By next year, our Tier 1 common metric under Basel III should be well ahead of the targeted 7% laid out by the BIS for 2019. We expect to restore the GE Capital dividend in 2012 once we're comfortably in our range of 7 to 9% Tier 1 common. We will continue, of course, to closely monitor U.S. regulatory developments, and we will remain well capitalized. On the next slide, as you'll see, the overall funding environment for GE Capital continues to improve. On the top left of the chart, we show you point-in-time long-term debt spreads versus LIBOR. But since financial markets continue to be somewhat volatile, this doesn't tell the whole story. First, if you look at GCC spreads versus other major financial institutions over time, you can see on the bottom right that our spreads are basically at or below the spreads of the strongest institutions. In addition, when you look at our average funding spreads versus LIBOR for 2010, we are across the board on every debt liability product we offer, showing improvement. Whether it is our CD product offered by our U.S. deposit-taking institutions, whose spreads are down about 42 basis points versus 09 averages, or our long-term debt spreads for a five-year money. On an unguaranteed basis, we paid an average of LIBOR plus 240 during 2009. This year, our average five-year issuance spread was only LIBOR plus 100, a decrease of 140 basis points. The same is true for our ABS spreads and credit cards. What this means is that as our TLGP debt and fees associated with it runs off by 2012, and as we continue to replace maturing debt with lower spread debt, our cost of funds should continue to improve. improving fundamentals and favorable technicals as we continue to take long-term debt supply out of the market should hopefully continue to drive spreads tighter. So on the next side, where does that leave us as we look forward? We said in 2008 that our goals were to be safe, secure, and competitive, and we said that we could do this as a mostly wholesale-funded institution. We recognized that we'd have to make some changes to this model, and we have. As we exit 2010, we're in very strong shape. Our long-term investment-grade debt market share is roughly 2.5% today, and it should decrease further in 11 and 12. We believe these levels are sustainable. As a strong AA-plus institution, we continue to have open access to all the major debt markets, and we have executed in 9 of them during 2010. As you know, we entered 2010 with strong cash balances and an issuance plan of $20 to $25 billion to pre-fund about half of what we thought we'd need to meet our 2011 plan. We took advantage of strong market conditions and will close the year out at the higher end of the range. Liquidity in the global CP market remains strong for us as well. We've lengthened our maturities and continue to see strong demand. We remain committed to running our program in the $40 to $50 billion range with bank backup lines of a similar amount. You will see the balances in our CP program fluctuate within this range as normal operating requirements change. We will continue also to build out our alternative funding sources, mostly through deposit programs in our U.S. ILC and thrift, as well as in key international markets. Besides our deposit-taking capability in our Eastern European banks, we've recently expanded our footprint into parts of Western Europe, notably Germany, France, and Switzerland. Adjusted for the Bach disposition, which was almost entirely funded by deposits, our alternative funding grew slightly on a year-over-year basis and represents a growing percentage of our balance sheet funding. We will maintain our strong liquidity position as we go forward. Our current cash on hand covers nearly 12 months of debt maturities. Our liquidity position is even stronger when you take into consideration our business cash flows from earnings and portfolio shrinkage. Taken together with strong parent support through the income maintenance agreement and our strong ratings, we believe that our funding model remains both resilient and competitive. So next, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan Zanin.
Thanks, Kathy. On page 26, we kick off the portfolio update with a high-level look at some of our key risk dynamics and provide our outlook across the major portfolio segments. Starting with real estate, we know the sector is challenged and has experienced negative credit migration, with a general lack of liquidity and relatively few market transactions. While the office market has seen pressure on both rates and occupancy, most recently we've observed that value declines across the broad portfolio have generally slowed. Financing markets appear set to improve, as indicated by the slow reemergence of some CMBS activity. Our teams continue to focus on lease-up execution and improving the value of the portfolio. Overall, it feels like we're seeing the bottom of this cycle, and we continue to work the portfolio to mitigate losses and enhance values. Ron Pressman will review the real estate portfolio in greater detail later in the presentation. Our GECAS aviation finance business has benefited from generally better operating environments and improved results posted by most major airlines. We continue to utilize our redeployment capability and deep asset expertise to get ahead of any specific obligor weaknesses, managing both obligor risk and our fleet mix. The combination of better fundamentals and our strong competitive position lead us to an improving outlook on this business. Across our commercial loans and leasing businesses, we're seeing favorable credit migration, and most of the portfolio, with some consumer-facing sectors, continuing to see some pressure. Our senior secured position serves us well to mitigate losses, and we view the outlook in this sector as improving as well. Our consumer book has benefited meaningfully from early actions taken to tighten our risk appetite. We continue to be focused on diligently working the mortgage books through a variety of loss mitigation programs. Later, Mark Begor will speak to the U.S. consumer book in greater detail, but our overall assessment of consumer is improving. Finally, our energy financial services portfolio continues to be stable, with largely contracted, hedged, and long-lived assets holding up well through the cycle. Turning to page 27, we've highlighted the funded assets exposure we have in Europe. Overall exposure is $136 billion, with just $21 billion related to exposure in the focus countries of Italy, Spain, Ireland, Portugal, and Greece. Given our business model, we have minimal exposure to sovereign risk across Europe, and in the higher risk focus countries, just about $300 million of sovereign risk, split about equally between Italy and Greece. We marked our Greek bond to fair market value in the second quarter. Across our European platform, the Central and Eastern European banks are showing improved performance. Our commercial loans and leasing business is largely a senior secured portfolio and is benefiting from favorable credit migration, and our risks are well diversified across a large commercial customer base. With minimal direct sovereign risk exposure, we focus our efforts on managing our direct client portfolios, which, by and large, are showing improved performance. Turning to page 28, we drill down a little into our Central and Eastern European global banking portfolio. Our $19 billion of receivables are primarily concentrated in our bank platforms in Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary, with product concentrations in mortgage, personal lending, and exposures to small and medium-sized enterprises. Credit quality in the portfolio has shown some improvement, with losses having peaked in the fourth quarter of 2009 at $262 million and sequentially reducing significantly to come in at $134 million in the third quarter this year. Delinquency has improved in the third quarter, and the business remains profitable, as it has every quarter through the crisis. We continue to watch for macroeconomic pressures in the region, but feel comfortable that the portfolio risks are well contained. Turning to page 29, we highlight the continued significant reduction of our UK home lending exposure, as receivables end the quarter at $19.6 billion, down just about $4.5 billion from the end of 2008. Our actions to curtail origination and devote significant additional resources to collection and loss mitigation have resulted in both an overall reduction of the portfolio balances and considerable reduction in credit costs and delinquencies. Third quarter 2010 year-to-date credit costs of $67 million are significantly better compared to $740 million for the like period in 2009. We have aggressively managed the REO stock down from its peak of over 2,000 units in the second quarter of 2009 to just about 750 units as we close in on the fourth quarter. HPI appears to be stabilizing after showing significant turnaround in the first and second quarter of this year. Overall, our portfolio efforts appear to be paying off as we continue to watch key portfolio drivers of home prices and interest rates. On page 30, we highlight our commercial lending and leasing portfolio. The $183 billion of funded assets are split with just under 50% dedicated to equipment finance and a little less than a third in cash flow lending and 13% dedicated to asset-based lending and factoring. The portfolio benefits from a broad spread of risk across multiple industries and a wide and diverse middle market client base. When we look at our portfolio performance as compared to Moody's broad measures, we see our portfolio has outperformed both in terms of actual default statistics and has performed significantly better with respect to our experience of loss given default. A combination of client selection, product mix, our underwriting standards, the senior secured nature of our portfolio, and operating rhythms dedicated to early problem identification have delivered strong and differentiated results in a difficult credit environment. Turning to page 31, we can see that the Commercial Loans and Leasing Americas business experience of continued success with residual realization rates, where quarter over quarter, strong collateral knowledge has allowed us to benefit from rates exceeding 110%. In the third quarter, each of our primary segments in healthcare, copiers, and transportation enjoyed robust realization rates. The outlier is corporate aircraft sector, where a combination of the severity of recession and the public scrutiny of corporate use of private aircraft has led to increased inventories and depressed values across the sector. Overall, portfolio residual realization rates have proven to hold up well through the cycle. Finally, on page 32, we outline the three fundamental pillars that support our approach to managing risk across the company. First, it starts with strong underwriting skills, where we continue to have an underwrite-to-hold mentality. We benefit from taking a senior secured approach to commercial lending, and we stick to simple products and structures. We manage our concentration risks and benefit from domain expertise in specialty segments where GE has deep industry knowledge. Second, our operating rhythms keep folks focused on intense portfolio management that allow us to engage early to identify and work through problems, aligning and realigning people and other resources to where they can be most effective in mitigating loss. We are active portfolio managers, believing that early and intense engagement delivers the best risk outcomes. Finally, we've worked to enhance and intensify our rigor around the infrastructure and governance that support our risk practices. We've defined firm-wide risk appetites to tighten boundaries around concentration risk. We've improved the analytics that support portfolio reconnaissance and decisioning, and we've reviewed and improved the policies and documentations underlying our approach to risk management. Overall, our continued focused approach to risk management has served us well through the cycle. Next up is Ron Pressman, the CEO of our real estate businesses, who will update you on that business.
Thanks, Ryan, and good afternoon, everyone. While the real estate markets have been challenging over the past 2 years, we've maintained three key goals: enhancing our portfolio, but also reducing it over time, preserving our strong lending and investing franchise, and building out a new and valuable format for investing in real estate as the sector recovers. I'd like to start today's review with four highlights on our progress. First, we've endeavored to reduce the overall size of our portfolio in a prudent and patient manner. To date, we've brought our total ending net investment down from a peak of $93 billion in June 2008 to $74 billion as of the end of the third quarter, the majority of which was accomplished through active property management, collections, and sales, with the remainder of the reduction through depreciation and losses. Second, our most recent valuation estimates result in a projected total embedded loss in our equity portfolio in the range of $5 to $5.5 billion by year-end 2010, down 20% plus from the peak of about $7 billion in the depth of the crisis. No doubt, this sector took a serious hit over the past 24 months. Roughly 40 to 45% peak-to-trough declines in property values in most major developed markets, in line with our valuations. Some bright spots have emerged recently, like New York City, London, and Paris, but sustained improvement will depend on stronger macroeconomic performance and job creation. Third, we expect 2010 to be our toughest year for losses and resulting net income performance. As of the third quarter, we recorded a net loss of $1.3 billion, driven by $3.4 billion of depreciation losses and impairments. That said, we do have $1.4 billion in year-to-date pre-tax earnings base arising from our debt and investing platforms. We currently see evidence that the macroeconomic trends that drove 2010 losses are stabilizing, which should lead to lower losses in 2011 and an improved financial performance ahead for our business. However, we can expect a two-year lag between the start of strong GDP and job growth and ultimate rent and value increases. Finally, we are leveraging our strong franchise to build a third-party asset management business in both equity and debt products. So far, we've won new relationships with some 40 institutional clients and increased our committed assets under management to around $7 billion. We turn to our debt portfolio on the next page. At the end of the third quarter, we had outstandings of $42 billion, of which 95% is senior secured first mortgages. Considering the headwinds we've been through, our debt book still demonstrates a strong average 2.2 times debt service coverage and 83% loan-to-value net of reserves. It is important to recall that we did not participate in land loans, did minimal construction lending, exited condo and retail lending early, and maintained our CMBS underwriting discipline, all of which served to blunt the impact of the down cycle on our debt portfolio. Our impaired loan population on the right includes loans with specific reserves, troubled debt restructures, and non-earning loans. 72% of our impaired loan book continues to pay in accordance with contractual terms as our borrowers see long-term value in these properties. Our standard practice is to revalue every asset in our core portfolio twice a year, but we revalue the majority of our impaired assets quarterly. We have substantially increased our reserves through this cycle, and our reserve coverage ratio has almost doubled over the past year. We record specific reserves whenever we believe that contractual payments on our loans are not fully recoverable, generally when the principal outstanding is greater than the property value. Our delinquencies continue to run well below the bank averages, mainly because we intentionally avoided the difficult sectors I noted earlier. As Jeff mentioned earlier, delinquency dollars have remained flat this year, but delinquency percent is up due to lower receivables overall. Considering the challenges in the market, we think our historic underwriting standards have held up reasonably well. What we did not anticipate was the sheer magnitude of the value erosion we've experienced. Next, on the next page, we survey some key dynamics of our debt portfolio. A year ago, we described our plan to reduce our exposure by some $3 billion during the course of this year. We have exceeded our expectations by collecting nearly twice that amount, bringing our debt portfolio down by roughly $8 billion, or 16%. With respect to maturities, as of the end of last year, we had just over $11 billion maturing over the course of 2010. Our resolution strategy is to collect the loan where possible, extend the loan when the value of the property and the capability of the borrower warrant further time to work toward recovery, and to foreclose when and where necessary. Overall, we expect the improving collections trend to continue into 2011. We have extended and restructured many loans, so let's turn to 2010's loan modifications displayed on the bottom left. Our primary goal is preserving the safety and security of our portfolio. We have obtained $500 million in loan paydowns this year and $200 million in increased pricing. Of the loans modified this year, 96% are at or better than original contractual terms. And finally, market liquidity is slowly picking up, and we believe this trend will support our efforts to manage maturities and continue to reduce our overall exposure into 2011. On the next page, we display our equity portfolio. We remain primarily an all-cash investor in high-quality real estate with a small per-property average investment. Through the very active efforts of our asset managers, we have held our occupancy steady in a declining global market. We have leased 22 million square feet of space around the world through the third quarter, with spec leasing picking up versus last year. We think that our strong leasing and asset management has helped improve our portfolio. For example, in the tough Tokyo market, we've increased our occupancy 2% during 2010, even though the average market occupancy fell by 1%. I mentioned at the outset that we update our estimate of the embedded value in our equity portfolio twice a year. At the end of last year, we estimated an unrealized loss of about $7 billion. Over the course of 2010, value declines and asset sales drove a roughly $1 billion increase in the unrealized loss, offset by $2.5 to $3 billion of losses in depreciation, which we believe will result in an estimated $5 to $5.5 billion embedded unrealized loss at year-end. We still expect to absorb that loss by 2013 through our normal depreciation and realization of losses, absent any further movement in market values. And finally, on the next page, we have consistently focused on the goals we've shared with you over the past few years, with prudent portfolio management and reduction our primary objectives. We're $4 billion ahead of our expected portfolio reduction for the year, and our team is managing the portfolio well through a challenging cycle. We have preserved our very strong lending and investing franchise through this volatility, which we are using as the foundation to build out an exciting third-party asset management business focused on both debt and equity products as our growth engine for the future. And now I'll turn it over to Mark Figor.
Thanks, Ron. I'll start on page 40 and give you an update on the U.S. consumer business. Many of you are familiar with our business. At the end of the third quarter, $41 billion worth of assets. We have two principal businesses in the U.S. One serves big retailers, serving both private label credit cards and retailer-branded co-brand cards. And this is done with retailers like Walmart, JCPenney, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Brooks Brothers, Gap, or about 30 others, and that's about 60% of our assets. The other business is our sales finance business, where we finance for retailers big-ticket transactions in the furniture, flooring, appliance, electronics, power sports space, and this would be with retailers, many you know, some you don't, because they're regional and in many cases very small businesses, but retailers like PC Richards, Ethan Allen, Rooms to Go, et cetera, are some of the partners that we have in the sales finance space. Big geographic distribution, over 185,000 BIT partners and points of distribution. You may recall that we originate all our accounts through these retailers. So if you go into a Brooks Brothers or Gap this afternoon, you'd be offered a new Gap card or Brooks Brothers card by the sales associate there. We would underwrite it and then approve the transaction if you met our credit criteria. And we'll originate about 16 million new accounts in 2010, and just during this call we'll originate 5,000 new accounts. So it's an active flow there. We have 50 million active cardholders, an average balance of a little over $800. That's about 25% of what a bank card balance would be, which we like. When we do have a loss, our severity is a lot lower, which helps in our profitability. Average FICO is just a bit over 700, which is mid-market America and is about equivalent to what a bank card business would have. And again, we like that in the space. Right-hand side of the chart just talks about how we're critical to both retailers and consumers, and we believe in this economic cycle more important than ever. If you start with retailers, we have very high penetration in many of our retail partners, some over 50%, which means one in two transactions are going on the GE card that's branded by the retailer, and it makes us very important to that retailer. In 2010, we'll do over $70 billion worth of retail sales, and if you think about that from a U.S. retail standpoint, there's only a couple of retailers, including Walmart, that would be larger than that. So we have real scale in how we're supporting our partners with that kind of sales. We also do it at a lower cost. If you and I go in this afternoon to a retailer and swipe our Visa or MasterCard, it's going to cost that retailer 150 basis points of their margin. When they partner with us, we're able to give them a rebate on every transaction that approaches 175 basis points. And for a retailer to get a swing of 3%, that could be a 30% increase in their margin. And we generate about $1.2 billion just of savings through the interchange difference to our retail partners. We're also critical to consumers. Consumers today want value. They still want to use our products. They're looking for discounts. They're looking for repeat purchase incentives, all of our products have these kind of incentives on them. Using Brooks Brothers as an example, every time you use the card, you generate points, and if you generate enough points, you can go back and get a free shirt or a suit. And those kind of value propositions are critically important to our retail partners to drive that repeat traffic. So we're very pleased with the position we have with both consumers and retailers. If you flip to slide 41, just as a snapshot of the last weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend sales, the left side is industry data. You probably read a lot of this, but you can see the green bars show foot traffic, which is up about 10%. 210 million U.S. consumers shopped over the Thanksgiving weekend, and they spent more, which is good news. So the consumer wants to spend when they get value. The average spend was up 10% to $370 per consumer. In the bottom left, you can see November same-store sales were up a very positive 6%, one of the strongest increases in a while, again reflecting our view that consumers want to shop and that they're looking for value. The right-hand side just gives you some metrics on our results over the Thanksgiving weekend. We took in a little over 600,000 applications over that weekend, which was up 15% over the prior year. But we're pleased that versus foot traffic, it wasn't quite double, but we were well ahead of what the foot traffic was, which shows that our value propositions, that our offers, and our in-store positioning and marketing with our retail partners is really paying off. In the middle, you see that we're keeping our approval rates tight. With unemployment still at the highest level we've seen in our lifetimes, we're being very cautious about who we grant credit to, although we're up a couple of percents there. But you can see that we did drive new accounts to 350,000 new accounts, 354,000 new accounts over the weekend, which was up 16%. And then the bottom there just shows we generated $1 billion or processed $1 billion worth of sales for our retail partners, which is up 15% versus the market. Same-store sales were up more in the 7% range. So it was a positive weekend for the industry, and we were very pleased that we were outperforming the industry and helping our partners grow. Both Ryan and Jeff talked about the underwriting actions that we took really starting in 07 and 08 when we first saw the first signs of the housing crisis, when we saw unemployment start to move up, and we also saw our delinquency start to move up. We tightened down quickly, and it's really paying off very positively to us. You can see in the top left, we cut approval rates by 20%, which is a very dramatic change in approval rates. meaning we raised our FICO score cutoffs, and they went up almost 50 points from low 700s to about 750. So we were very careful and are continuing to be careful about who comes in the door. And then second, for those that we had accounts with, the 50 million active accounts, we did some very aggressive credit line decreases to cut open to buy. We took about $162 billion out of our consumers' wallets, both to manage our losses, but to help them manage through this credit crisis. And then on top of that, we added about 1,000 collectors, so we worked the accounts a lot harder. The bottom left is one a chart I've showed before in some of the analyst discussions, but it really is a huge deal for us. Historically, our business and bank cards move delinquencies move up and down with unemployment. If unemployment goes up, our delinquencies and losses go up, and conversely, when it goes down, our losses and delinquencies go down. And we've had an historical 1 to 1.1 relationship with unemployment, and for the first time in the history of our business, we broke that correlation. You can see that in the gray shaded area. And it's really a big deal. We're now tracking at 1 to 0.6. So even though unemployment continued to rise, we've been able to keep our delinquencies at a lower rate, and it's really paid off, as you can see on the right-hand side. The right-hand side shows our loss rates that both Ryan and Jeff talked about. In 2008, $4.5 billion worth of losses. We kept that flat in 2009 at 4.5, even with unemployment going from 7.4% up to 10. Which is really a big deal, and we were about $2.3 billion better than the adverse stress case, which was a great performance. In 2010, year-to-date, we're at $2.4 billion, which would compare to $3.2 billion in 2009, so we're tracking well ahead of 2009, and we expect to end the year in about a $3.3 billion range, or being 1.2 or so better than 2009, with unemployment staying flat at a very, very high level. So really a big deal for us that these proactive actions have broken that correlation and allowed us to really manage the loss line in this very challenging U.S. economy. Page 43 just gives you a quick summary on the business. All these actions, as well as the actions on price and costs, have really paid off in the bottom line. Last year, $650 million of earnings. Year-to-date, $1 billion of earnings, which is the first time the business has been north of a billion. And of course, we still have the fourth quarter to go, and you know, we expect the year to finish at more than double 2009. Our return on investment is up dramatically, also up about 2x. And you know, we're really pleased with our scale position in the U.S. We are the market leader in the retail card space. We think we're more important than ever to retailers and consumers. We're a big part of the retailer sales, and consumers you know, want to spend and want to spend where they're going to get value. We've done a great job adding new distribution. We've added about $1.3 billion of new relationships year to date. And on top of that, you saw our announcement a few weeks ago, the Citibank acquisition, which brought another 36 different retail relationships to us in the sales finance space and about $2.1 billion of receivables. And that transaction is accretive in the fourth quarter. Our deep domain in the loss and in the business really helped with those early loss actions and paid off immensely. Pricing has also helped us. Our margins are up in 2010 while we've absorbed the impact of the CARD Act. And Kathy mentioned earlier that we're funding the business through our thrift in Utah. So we're really pleased with the strong execution of the business in 2010 in such a challenging economic environment. I'll turn it over to Bill Carey.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mark. That's a really great example of a business that that fits with the future of G Capital. It's got tremendous domain, long-term customer relationships, a real scale advantage, and currently a very favorable competitive dynamic. We're quite pleased with the performance there. Now turning to page 45, in the next few slides, I'm going to give you a feel for how we're managing our balance sheet and business mix. We're making a clear effort to expand our core businesses, and you'll get a sense for the sustained volume pickup we're seeing and an updated look at our margins. As we've shown you before, the earnings power of the portfolio continues to expand. On page 46, you can see the glide path we're targeting for the size and the overall mix of our balance sheet as we progress to 2012. We're shrinking both our red assets and our real estate portfolio, and in fact, we expect to be down close to $80 billion in those two categories by the time we end 2011. At the same time, we're growing the core part of GE Capital, the parts of the company Mike outlined earlier where we see real competitive advantage and capability. These businesses will grow at double-digit rates over 2009 and will compose almost 70% of the total GE Capital balance sheet by the end of 2011. As we've discussed before, we're managing down the red assets through multiple runoffs as well as through divestitures. On the runoffs, Ryan shared some insight into the progress we're making shrinking our lower-returning mortgage portfolios in places like the UK. The strong performances of our restructuring teams are creating capacity to grow our company while delivering against the $440 million target. Turning to page 47, here's a brief update on our BD activity where we've had similar success shrinking the red assets. Highlighted here are a few deals we've executed this year. We expect to close several in the remaining weeks of 2010, the largest of which is the sale of our 75% ownership stake in BAC, a Central American banking operation. As we've said previously, this is an example of a high-performing business that has run well, but doesn't fit with our longer-term core business model. This is a win-win transaction. The team at Bach wins as they join with a high-performing Latin American financial services leader, Grupo Aval, based out of Colombia, and we win as we complete a good deal. In fact, we will see a meaningful gain reported in discontinued operations when this closes. In addition to the disc ops gain in the fourth quarter, we'll see a decline in continuing revenue and in deposit balances since we will deconsolidate BAC when we close the deal in the fourth quarter. Lastly, on disc ops, we're working a few additional divestitures that will partially or might partially offset the BAC gain here in Q4. One final point on this page, not only are we delivering a reduction in our balance sheet, we're reducing the complexity of our operations as we exit subscale units in more volatile markets. So we're building a better business here. We've got a pretty full pipeline of similar transactions that we will close as we head towards the $440 billion target in ending an investment. Now, flipping to page 48, this is a look at the growth of our core platforms. The top left of the page shows the momentum we're seeing in on-book volume growth. Obviously, we do see the impact of seasonality in the fourth quarter here, but activity levels are also levels are well up over 2009. You can see that specifically in the green parts of the bars, which represent our core commercial activities globally. The consumer numbers are skewed a bit as they have experienced the largest impact from our balance sheet management activities, particularly in the mortgage space outside the United States. The bottom left of the page focuses on the commercial lending and leasing operations of GE Capital, businesses that you're familiar with, like copier leasing, floor planning, and factoring in our businesses in Europe. And as you can see, we've enjoyed sustained increases in new business volume exceeding $11 billion in the fourth quarter of 2010. Similarly, the pipeline or backlog of unfunded deals has continued to expand nicely. We've got over $38 billion in unfunded transactions that our teams are working aggressively to close. While we're seeing a solid pickup in new volume, we're also holding the line on pricing. The upper right side of the page gives you a sense for the life of deal returns or ROIs we book year to date in 2010. All in all, we see an improving picture here. Now, turning to page 49, this gives you another look at this return impact. While the ROIs on the previous page represent fully loaded life of deal returns on investment, what you see here is the margins in the existing portfolio today. Think of this as the earnings calories, if you will, in the total portfolio. As you can see from the line chart in the upper right of the page, we've seen sustained margin improvement in both our commercial and consumer businesses, and we expect that to continue. The left side of page 50 details the margins for the current new volume we're booking and compares that to the margin that exists for the assets that will roll off in 2010. For example, the consumer new volume in 2010 is at a margin of about 13%. That compares very favorably to the 2010 consumer runoff at about 9.5%. This means good things for the embedded profitability of our financing assets into 2011 and beyond. Turning to page 50, lastly, I'll give you a few quick bullets on the efforts we've deployed to ensure our customers and our other stakeholders have a clear view of our business. Late last year, we launched a series of advertisements to showcase the value we deliver to economies around the world. We deployed the greatest effort here in the United States. We wanted people to know that we were open for business, that we were supporting the economy and delivering value for our customers and the communities where our people live and where they work. You can see a couple of the ads on the bottom left of the slide, and on the top you can see the results. We've made great progress both in terms of awareness and, importantly, in the perception of GE Capital in the minds of future customers. In the bottom right, you can see a select few of the customers where GE Capital has invested in their success. And while it's always challenging to draw a direct correlation to this effort and financial impact, we've seen material increases in new business volume around the campaigns. And you'll see us do more of this in 2011. So with that quick look at the growth picture, I'll kick it back to Mike to wrap up.
Great. Thanks so much, Bill. Before I start, let me say that I misspoke earlier and introduced Ron Pressman as the CFO of Real Estate. He is the CEO of Real Estate. So I just wanted to clear that up. I've got just a couple of more pages here. I'll start with 2011. Jeff walked you through this year already. Our outlook for next year on commercial lending and leasing is positive and is driven by lower losses and higher margins. We expect consumer to have another good year on better losses and margins as well. Ron gave you a good update on real estate. We're projecting losses to stabilize and a lower loss next year than this year as well. Aviation and energy to continue to perform well, and we'll manage them with intensity as we go through the aviation cycle. Overall, we believe the businesses are well positioned to deliver improved earnings in 2011. Feel pretty good about the year. On the last page, I'll revisit the valuable franchise discussion that I took you through before. This is the GE Capital of the future. We see solid earnings growth. We will operate with more liquidity, more capital. We'll have a higher quality of earnings. Returns will be in the 11 to 15% range. We'll generate surplus capital, and we'll stay true to our business model, leveraging the strategic connection that we have with GE. So with that, I'd like to say thank you, and thanks to the team here for pulling this together, and thank you for joining us in today's discussion. So with that, Trevor, let's open it up to questions.
Yes, thanks, Mike and team. Noelia, let's open up the lines for Q&A.